61 years ago, 1947, Roswell, the UFO crash. We all know about it. We've been there many times. The 61st anniversary is now slated for this coming July 4th weekend. Actually, it starts on the 3rd, on Thursday, and runs through Sunday. We have Peter Robbins with us on the line from New York City. Peter is in charge of the speakers at one of the venues. There are two venues going on, one at the UFO Museum and at the Civic Center. Peter wrote a book with Larry Warren that's very interesting, Left at Eastgate. I like that title, Peter, and welcome to the show. You might tell me about why you called it that.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry, and it's great to be back on. The title is Pure Larry. When he first approached me in 1987 with the book, the idea for the book, what he had was what he had lived through, which was historic and really absolutely shattering, and the title. I sort of think in a straight line where some people sort of look, you know, their thoughts are like a horizon. And it was a couple of years later, we were doing something and I mentioned I really liked that title. And he said, you like both meanings of it. And I said, what do you mean? You know, because it refers to a left turn that the security detail he was involved in their motorcade, was told to take to head up the logging road in the forest where they disembarked and then, of course, walked into their almost Twilight Zone-like episode from this amazing UFO encounter.
Yeah, and before you go any further, Peter, I want to remind people we have a couple of interviews available on our website on demand that they can go listen to your discussions about that Rendlesham Forest thing. Now, go ahead.
Yeah. What he brought up was, of course, they made that left turn, but what happened to these men and how they were treated by the military after the fact was in some respects unconscionable. They were literally left at Eastgate. And I thought to myself, wow, how could I have missed that? And I'm the co-writer of the book, and that, in fact, is the more important title. So that's where it comes from.
We're going to talk about a lot of things that are happening these days. The Vatican and their, I guess, a lot of people considered it a shocker, what they talked about. Basically, the good father said, if you believe in UFOs and ETs, that doesn't mean you can't go to heaven, right?
I think that was almost the starting point. If you read it all between the lines, what they were saying was, we wouldn't even be bringing this up if we had already not thought long and hard about this. And in our opinion, this phenomena and the other intelligences behind it are as real as we are. That was my take on it at the surface.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And what do you, you know, we might as well not put this off. Let's consider the Catholic Church and ETs. There's a rumor they have the biggest research library or one of the biggest ever at the Vatican. Is that true?
You know, Jerry, we could spend a couple of shows on nothing but this. You're absolutely right. The Vatican Library is a legend among legends. We have no idea what they have there, except that it certainly involves probably the keys to some of the greatest secrets and mysteries of mankind. One tiny archaeological example. We're all familiar with the huge, imposing sculptures on Easter Island. There's no hieroglyphics or writing on any of them, but when Captain Cook and the first settlers got there, there were written tablets in an undeciphered language. I don't have to tell you where they ended up. Literally, that last scene in the first Indiana Jones movie where the camera goes to the long shot and we see this endless warehouse based on the classic ending of Citizen Kane, that's the way I visualize the Vatican Library. It houses the greatest repository of repressed, suppressed, arcane, ancient mysteries that we are aware of. Maybe there are other, you know, hidden libraries from the Incans and...
other civilizations, but the Catholic civilization has been around...
For 2,000 years, as far as its archiving of
yes.
Artifacts from around... around the world, not just Christian. And let's face it, I say this with all due respect, and I grew up Jewish, and I'm proud of being Jewish, and respect my friends of every religious persuasion, but there is an aspect of all religion in its most organized establishment way that is about controlling people, the way we think, and the way we live our lives, good, bad, and indifferent. And the church is certainly no exception. What interested me most when the story broke is this is only the latest chapter in an ongoing story that, as far as I recall, I first picked up on a dozen, maybe 15 years ago. And you may have a memory of it too, Jerry. What I remember was, and it was released as a news story via a press release from the Vatican, that the Vatican, which has its own university, so to say, had established a chair, I believe in the Italian translation it came across as extraterrestrial studies. And what was put forward in the official line was, let's just say that there are other intelligences, other beings, other life forms out there in the cosmos that may or may not be coming and going. If, let's just say, it turns out to be true, all of us are going to have a little bit of readjusting to do, but once the dust settles, these are other intelligences. They may not be human, but they're obviously intelligent and evolved, and you know what our first responsibility is? To make them into good Christians. It almost superimposed the old, stencil of, you know, get out there and convert the heathens, made me almost gasp in a way. I didn't know whether to almost laugh or cry. It is the nature of organized religion to want to expand and grow stronger, and in many religions, to convert people, to influence your fellow citizens and the world around you. And that is, you know, part of the mandate of the religion.
And it is kind of shattering, I guess, in a way to describe, to use an adjective, about the fact that here is earthly man thinking about obviously intelligent civilizations coming here, and we're trying to convert them to our religion. And I wonder if they've ever thought about maybe they might want to convert us to their religion.
Maybe. I hadn't thought of that, but that's going to make a lot of people not terribly happy. It also brings up some extremely delicate questions of the nature of theology and religion. Many people maintain with great scholarship that, you know, our whole Judeo-Christian tradition is what it is, but parts of it are drawn from earlier traditions. For example, we know from numerous works of scholarship that the idea of a great flood, of other things that come up in the Old Testament, appeared in earlier ancient, often religious texts, and seems to record genuine pre-history. But we make this our own, and I was brought up in my tradition to understand that the Old Testament was the truth, and allegories, analogies, ways of giving you lessons in life, and incorporating certain pieces of history or myth and legend that happened before there were Jewish people or Christian people out there. Some people may feel what I say is almost blasphemous. For me, it's simply the way it is. And I, again, say it with all due respect for folks that may feel otherwise.
So what do you think the Catholic Church is trying to do here?
Well, I think they are doing something extraordinary. And in some ways, it's just logical. In other ways, it's quite courageous. I think that for those of us, you, I, our friends and colleagues, who really study the best information that's out there, and let's face it, we've been at this for a long time, we've met a lot of the most important people in the work, we've read the books, the idea that the Earth is being visited by other intelligences, which may or may not mean us well, there may be numerous types of them coming here for numerous reasons, in machines, for lack of a more descriptive word, of extremely advanced technology, isn't about belief or even controversy. It's simply the way it is. Now, for many people, deeply conditioned by media, our government, feel, oh, it's nonsense, and still have it wired up that, you know, if you're one of those kooky people that takes UFOs seriously, you're moving your mouth. I'm hearing you say I take UFOs seriously, but what I'm hearing in my mind is I'm a little crazy. You don't want to get stuck with me on an elevator. And I think there's still a lot of those folks out there in every religion and in every tradition. But let's face it, if you are an extremely devout member of any religion, the more devout you are, the more you believe in what you're taught, the more questioning anything outside of it or anything that might fly in the face of it is threatening to your belief system. If one single belief is proved empirically to be, well, a misinterpretation of something else, it could cause you to question the whole structure. And here's the church saying in so many words to Catholics everywhere, we've been thinking about this. We want you to think about this. The fact may be that aliens are here, that they come and go, that UFOs are real. And as our friend Stan Friedman has said a number of times, the question isn't, are UFOs representative of advanced technology and machines that can do this, that, and the other thing? The question is, has anyone ever been? And of course, the answer to that is yes. And if it's yes, it's the biggest story of all time, or since the birth of Jesus, or since whatever you feel the most important story of all time is. And for many people, it is a paradigm shatterer. It absolutely knocks the stuffing out of your belief system. So I think they have wisely encouraged Roman Catholics to begin thinking seriously about this. And if push comes to shove, and either there is what is referred to in the trade as disclosure, or governments, well, other governments are a lot healthier about this. I'm going to get onto one of those related stories shortly. But our government is a perfect example of the worst kind of way to behave in the past decades about this study. Keep classifying, keep denying, keep offering up silly explanations or rationales, and keep pointing people away from the fact that, you know, we've never told them the truth. So the church is saying here, time to open our minds a little bit, and it may make it a little bit easier down the line. Just one question here. We're all taught as children in our traditions that we are made in God's image. Okay. If that's so, whose image are they made in?
Interesting question, for sure. And you brought up the religious angle, both of us did, actually, and that brings me back to Roswell, and that's one of the theories on why Roswell has been so secretive, is that a lot of people, I think, that the government made a decision that due to our religious nature, we just couldn't take the idea of extraterrestrials. And then you brought up Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skulls, and that latest Indiana Jones movie talks about crystal skulls.
I think it opens actually and, yeah, I think even, on the 22nd, which is a day or so from when we're recording this. Oh, no, that is today.
No, it is today.
The folks at Roswell are particularly excited because, you know, as part of their very first trailer they released some months back, once again, they use this great device of a huge warehouse room filled with boxes and crates and artifacts, and a camera goes to a huge sealed-up box, and you know the word stenciled across the side of it. It's Roswell.
That's
or not,
right.
This plays
and
into the film, or it's just a hook for attention and promoting the film. We're all going to find out soon.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come right back, Peter, and we're going to talk about Roswell and what's happening this year. 61 years. We'll be right back. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin.
Hi, this is Rod C. Davis. I have a question. Do you love to travel? Then you need to check out YTB's weekly travel deals and steals. Just go to the Travel Store and More banner, click on the Business and Vacation Travel link, and then sign up for the Deals and Steals newsletter for great deals every week to America's favorite vacation spots. And while you're logged on, you can send flowers to that special person, buy your perfect car, buy tickets to attractions, book an exotic hunting or fishing trip, set up a honeymoon registry, and much more. Just click on the extras link and take advantage of YTB's huge purchasing power that saves you money. And if you'd like to save a lot of money on your travel, then check out the Travel Business Opportunity link and find out how you could earn a commission each and every time that you book a trip. You can be sure that Travelocity, Orbitz, and Expedia won't do that. Click on the banner and bookmark the page for your future use. You can save money and make money at the same time. Check us out.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're talking about Roswell with Peter Robbins. And Peter, you're involved. Well, you're a major player this year in Roswell, even though you're in New York right now.
I am, and up to my eyeballs. I must say I was caught off guard and quite flattered after speaking at the big 60th anniversary conference there last year that the city of Roswell approached me and asked me to assist with organizing this year's festival and kind of develop a strategy to move forward into the future. And I'm proud to say that my official titles are UFO Speakers Conference Coordinator, and I am their public relations representative with the media of the world right now. Can you believe it?
Well, congratulations. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit in Laughlin, and we said as we get a little closer, we're going to have to do a lot of shows on this, because we've covered Roswell very, you know, direct from there for the last 5 years.
Sure.
And so what's on the agenda, since you're the speakers coordinator?
Well, it's a great speakers lineup, and this is independent of an entirely separate conference running kind of parallel to the city's, put on by the Distinguished Museum and Research Center there.
Right.
The city's conference will feature a great spectrum of speakers.
Now you're going to be back at the Civic Center, right?
You know, I don't know if that's been fully finalized. There are a number of terrific venues. They'll be using that for part of it, but I don't know if that's the final location of the speakers. We'll certainly know a little bit later. Well, we're on the edge of May here, but we'll certainly know in the next couple of days. First up is one of the great scholars, I think, in the field, and that's Donald Burleson. Don is the MUFON State Regional Director. Oh, no, he's State Director. And he is not only a New Mexican, he is a resident of Roswell. His background is absolutely terrific. He's a master's in mathematics and English, PhD in English literature, longtime teacher, author of like 14 different books, a real Roswell specialist as far as the research goes, and a respected writer on a number of other rather dark conspiratorial stories and other major UFO cases, including the Lubbock Lights, the more recent Texas sightings, and has been all over the media. His talk will be about Lubbock, Loveland, the Texas cases, Roswell, and the reality of extraterrestrial visitation.
Yeah, Texas seems to have jumped into the forefront here because of Stephenville and the big sighting there, but this Lubbock thing, that's an interesting story.
It sure goes way back,
yeah.
And for a lot of us, that was one of the cases that we cut our teeth on. Still some of the most compelling and haunting photographs of V formations at a time when you couldn't even fake these things if you tried.
Yeah.
Often the case, like the more recent Stephenville cases, even though it's anecdotal evidence, the efficacy, the straightforwardness, the honesty of the witnesses who come forward at the risk of media and public ridicule, who are asking for nothing. They don't want to write a best-selling book. They don't want to be on Oprah's show. They don't want a cent for doing what they're doing. They just would like to be treated with some respect while they share, often with a news reporter, the closest account they can give of the most extraordinary thing they have ever seen in their lives. So for me, these people deserve tremendous respect. And God bless them, they just keep going up against, you know, sort of the foxification.
Yeah, yeah. You know, back there in the 50s especially, but even later, flyovers were pretty common in Washington, D.C., of all places. And, of course, the Aztec story, there's one, you know, about a flyover there a couple of years later. So, I mean, this is not new stuff.
No, it's ongoing. Of course, you know, modern researchers date the beginning of the so-called modern age of UFO research from the Kenneth Arnold sightings in Washington State. state, and then a scant week and a half later, the Roswell crash, and that kind of kicked off the so-called phenomena in modern times. But the fact of the matter is, with a little bit of research and study, I think almost any open-minded person who can tolerate, you know, stretching their mind out a bit will realize this has been happening since time immemorial.
And we mentioned the religious angle earlier in the Old Testament, and you're Jewish. I don't know if you'd agree with me or not, but it appears that some of the things described in the Old Testament could very easily be UFOs.
Not only do I agree with you, but I think it's a terribly important thing for all of us to at least take a look at, and it's worth a moment's digression here. Some years ago, just as sort of, I don't know, an intellectual experiment, I took our family Bible when I became 13 years old, when you're traditionally, symbolically become a man in the Jewish tradition, and I borrowed Old Testaments from I ended up with about 8 different versions and translations. And I went to what for me is one of the most provocative stories in the Bible, and that's Ezekiel. And you know it well. Here's Ezekiel, and the translations differed only by a hair here and there. It's one of the most intact from translation to translation. Ezekiel's a simple man. He's minding his sheep. And lo, you know, out of the heavens comes, quote-unquote, always described the same way, a wheel within a wheel with eyes all around of the appearance of burnished beryllium, and it touches down. Now, this isn't like an ethereal kind of vision. It's not made out of gossamer and silk, and you can't see through it. It's a wheel. It's a disc. It has eyes all around. If I was an ancient that had never seen, you know, a 19th or 20th century machine, especially a commercial airplane, eyes all around might be a pretty good way to say in sort of a romantic. And it comes down. It's made out of metal. It's a burnished beryllium. The angel, and we know from Zachariah Sitchin that the original translation, the original meaning of that word, which we now only associate with religion, goes back to the Sumerians. The word translate is emissary or go-between. It's a word you'd see in the diplomatic corps. The angel is encased in metal, and they begin, you know, a dialogue, so to say, a relationship. Ezekiel is given certain information, and it takes off from there. For me, if I were, you know, very devoted to my religious teachings, I did not have a lot of tolerance for people that wanted to question it, and somebody said, excuse me, with all due respect, isn't it just possible that this one story here, based on this analysis, and, you know, Joseph Blumrich, a NASA systems designer, years ago wrote a terrific book called The Spaceships of Ezekiel, which he approached as a skeptic and ended up saying, my God, this is not unlike things I built to go to the moon. That this one story here might just be an absolutely understandable misunderstanding of an extraterrestrial intervention, or whatever you want to call it. If I was very set in my beliefs, this could be terribly upsetting for me. If I had a more open mind, it might be the beginning of, you know, thinking of a whole pantheon of other ideas that don't take away from my religion or the wonderful, you know, texts that go with it, but it would allow me to think beyond it without feeling threatened. But it's a delicate line to walk.
Well, you're right, and we do a lot of shows on that, and it does get a lot of different reactions. Let's get back to Roswell.
Yeah. Moving on, next speaker, and this is not necessarily the order of the lineup, is an old friend of mine that I haven't seen in years, and that's Dr. John Carpenter. John is best known for his work in the Midwest, working with people that seem to have been through the abduction experience, and he has terrific credentials. He's a master, he has a master's in social work, licensed psychiatric therapist, who trained in his hypnotic teachings at the Distinguished Menninger Clinic. John has worked with numerous people, much in the manner of people like Bud Hopkins, Dave Jacobs of that ilk, and you may remember that in 1991, there's kind of a historic event that occurred in Massachusetts. It was the world's first conference on alien abductions. spun this a little bit to make people feel or think that MIT sponsored this. They did not. It was simply held at their facility. But at that initial very, very important event, John presented six separate papers. He's been all over the media over the years, he will be another one of our major presenters.
You have an interesting lineup there. Let's go ahead and tell the folks a little bit more.
Yeah, well, the next guy, he's one of our fastest rising stars, and for anybody familiar with the subject, hardly needs an explanation, and that's my friend and neighbor, sort of, up here in New York, Rich Dolan. Rich is a perfect example of an academic who kind of switched horses in midstream. He was quite far along in his doctorate in history, and as part of a paper that he was working on about post-war history, he had done some Freedom of Information Act work and received a whole bunch of documents, and they told him about that area in the 70s he was studying, but there was an awful lot about a subject he had never really given thought to, which was UFOs and how seriously the Americans and the Soviets took them. And that was it. I don't think he ever went back to his PhD work, but he did give us, readers and research community and everybody out there, a remarkable 500-page book called UFOs and the National Security State. And I can tell you from the horse's mouth, that is part one of what was going to be a two-part book and is now going to be a three-part book. Part two of UFOs and the National Security State will be out sometime this year. Rich is not just one of our greatest scholars. He's a terrific public speaker, an extremely knowledgeable guy, and one of the nicest people in the work as well.
That's true. We're big fans of Rich. And Greg Bishop has been there before, and he's an interesting fellow. He did that thing
Greg is one of those people who really has a hand in a number of different areas on kind of the paranormal beat. He has for years put out a journal, I think it's online now, called The Excluded Middle, and it refers to a lot of stuff that drops between the cracks in history and science and things, and also refers to those people who are not, you know, stone cold believers or very dedicated, or at the other extreme, deniers or debunkers. They're the people in the middle who are quietly looking at both sides with an open mind and trying to figure out what is going on. And his specialty is on disinformation, conspiracy theories, but he approaches it in a very pragmatic way. He's also one of the nicest people in the field, and like you, he's a radio host. He has a weekly show that comes out of the Los Angeles area called Radio Mysterioso, where he has guests on, everybody from me to Jim Mars to who knows whom, discussing, you know, kind of outsider stuff. His talk is just perfect for a conference like this. It's on alternative theories of UFO origins, and Lord knows there are a lot of them.
The whole thing kicks us off on July 3rd, right?
It does.
That's a Thursday.
The 3rd through Sunday the 6th.
And the 4th of July itself is that Friday.
Yes, sir, and we're going to be marking it just like every other American community.
Yeah, there's always a big fireworks display and a big parade. I don't know if the parade is on the 4th or the 3rd or the 5th, but there'll be one.
You better believe it.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll continue with the speakers here. And there's, you know, if you go to Roswell, a lot of people, Peter, haven't been there. There's events going on everywhere, all over. I mean, the planetarium, you name it. They've got it going.
Not only that, but this year and moving forward into the future, it's particularly family-friendly and kid-friendly, as well as every, you know, UFO serious student and scholar. There's going to be a pair of conferences going on, and again, the study of the research center. The city is putting together some extraordinary exhibits, but there's something for everyone there, and as you know, this is not some high-priced, snooty town. Hotel, restaurant rates are reasonable. The folks are extremely nice. It's got a lot of other things that you could go there and visit, even if there never was such a thing as UFOs.
We'll be right back to talk more about if there is UFOs and your speaker lineup in a moment. Peter Robbins is our guest, and you have a fancy title again. I like that. Give it to me.
I got too fancy, Ty. I'm UFO Festival Speakers Conference Coordinator and Public Relations Representative for the City of Roswell, New Mexico.
We'll be right back with more about Roswell. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
We're talking about Roswell, and Peter Robbins is our guest on the line from New York. But you'll be in Roswell over the 4th of July weekend, and you've been very instrumental in arranging the speakers this year for one of the venues. The UFO Museum also has a line of speakers. And as we went to the break, Peter, we talked about all the other things happening in the town, too. It's really a party. And it's a family event.
I can't take credit for this terrific lineup. There are some wonderful associates in town that really pulled together the speakers lineup, and I'm doing the logistics, you know, from there. Next speaker is one that I have never heard and looking forward to hearing and meeting, and that's David Flynn. And the title of his lecture is Temple at the Center of Time. David also comes to us with a unique, absolutely singular background in clinical psychology and biblical ufology. So he is going to be looking, I think, in great part at that most fascinating and intriguing area of Mars that's been come to be known as Cydonia, that many of us feel is as much a remnant of an ancient, who knows how many tens or hundreds of thousands of years in the past, civilization, not unlike the Giza Plateau in Egypt. And I think it's going to be a particularly thought-provoking talk. Again, I'm less familiar with David's work than a lot of other folks in the field, but I'm really looking forward to it.
I've heard good things about him.
Yeah. Our next up is a guy named Mike Barra, and his talk is titled Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. Mike comes to us with an engineering consultant with over 25 years in the field, working with a lot of major aerospace companies. And he also is co-author of a book with Richard C. Hoagland. The book is called Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, the same title as his talk, and has the distinction of being an absolutely legitimate New York Times best-selling book. So that's another one I think that a lot of folks are going to be lining up to hear.
It's very interesting. Every year you come up with a good lineup of speakers, or someone does. It's always very interesting. How many more speakers do you have?
Well, on this docket, go through them pretty quick. We have Karen Dolan, Rich Dolan's wife.
Who I really like as well as Rich. She's a radio hostess, too.
Yes, sir. She broadcasts Through the Keyhole is her show, and it comes out of Rochester, New York, which is their home. Karen is really a pioneer of an area much neglected, which is media desensitization around the subject of UFOs on children. As a terrific mother and, again, wife of one of our most distinguished researchers, Karen has really begun to put together a picture that I think everybody should become more familiar with.
That's true. And we did an interview with her last year about that subject. It's still available on our Roswell section. In fact, Rich was on our show, too, as well.
I would encourage all your listeners,
and so was Peter,
to go to your website and to listen to Rich and Karen Dolan. they're one of the few husband and wife teams that I think is really making a major mark in this.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, of course, there's the financial Dolans, and these are the UFO and paranormal Dolans.
Well, there you go.
I've talked to Rich and Karen about that before. I think they ought to team up and play on that. Who else do you have lined up, Peter?
Another really terrific presence in the field, more quiet and scholarly, but increasingly one of my favorites, is Alejandro Rojas. And Alejandro's talk is called MUFON and the Media, Awakening the Sleeping Giant. Now, he has the distinction of being the director of public education for the Mutual UFO Network, which most of your listeners know is the largest UFO research organization in the world. He also does a weekly spot and update on yet one more terrific talk show, and that's UFONAUT Radio that comes out of the Los Angeles area. He comments on the UFO news at the beginning of each show. So he's another one in our terrific lineup.
He's quite a guy.
He is indeed. And we're going to be hearing more and more from him in the future, that's for sure. I think right now, for those of us that continue to try to educate ourselves about what is cutting edge, you can't learn too much about the way that the media has treated this subject historically, which overwhelmingly has been quite cavalier, and have a chance at changing it. To understand the past is to have your best opportunity at changing what hasn't worked about it.
I notice a little more serious treatment in the past year with the media.
I'm cautiously optimistic that we are turning a corner now, but because we are here in the middle of it, you know, you don't really feel the turn, but there'll be a time when people will look back on this period in history and say, that's when it began to really change after more than 50 years of the government, our government, and the media trying to make people feel it was nonsense, it was silly, it was misinterpretations, it's the ravings of deluded minds, it's people who want to feel special, it's, you know, top secret first world planes that, you know, are very terrestrial but may seem pretty dynamic in their output. But it really was going on, and that's when it started to turn around.
It's interesting how the media plays a role in everything we do.
All I can say, Jerry, is thank goodness that for years, decades now, even, there have always been a core of courageous broadcast journalists and commentators, you know, like yourself. I think back to when I was a kid and Long John Neville, who I'd listened to on the radio growing up on Long Island.
Yeah, we had the producer of the Long John Neville show, Paris Flamon, who will be on next week, as a matter of fact. And we're going to talk about, basically it's a JFK story and show, but Long John did a lot of UFO stuff. He was a true believer.
Absolutely. And, you know, people like Frank Edwards, who not only had a huge broadcasting impact around the country, he was the person that introduced us to somebody named Donald Kehoe. He had best-selling books. He passed away shortly before he was scheduled to testify before Congress, and although I am not, you know, see enemies behind the trees kind of conspiracist, that is a death that I do question.
Well, we've talked about that and done shows with you. There's been several people.
Oh, yeah, and you may remember, it was last year, no, 2 years ago at Roswell, I did a talk on the possibility that a certain number of key researchers, commentators, writers may have not died natural death.
Yeah, and we... We do still have that interview available. If people want to just go to the search and enter your name, that interview will come up.
It's another one. I'm pretty proud of that one. I was not really happy that I ended up doing that because I tend to think a lot of people, you know, put spins and exaggerate, and people die for natural reasons, but they're key in the work, so obviously, you know, they were killed by the bad guys. But even I was surprised by some of the material I dug up.
And many PhDs dropped off. it's really a sad story. And it makes you wonder why would it be worth murder?
Well, that, for me, is one of the most provocative questions. You'd think that would immediately draw the attention. Unless, you know, if I think the best way you can, you know, take people's attention away from a potential troublemaker, even if they're stirring up stuff that's based on a real problem you want to hide, is to ignore them and belittle them. After the tragic death of my friend and a friend of ufology, Dr. John Mack of Harvard, a lot of people immediately assumed that, you know, he was killed in some kind of operation because he had the best credentials of anyone in the world. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's a Harvard psychiatrist. He's distinguished in his work with adolescent suicide. He was a pioneer researcher on the abduction story. But I was in England when it happened, and I really looked into it. The thought that a friend of yours might have been murdered and you're in the same work is unsettling in a number of ways. I am convinced that it was a drunken lorry driver, what we'd call a truck driver here, who had had his license suspended five times, who came tearing around that corner in a way when John crossed the street that if you had had, you know, a six-person CIA hit team on walkie-talkies saying, you know, gun your engine now, he wouldn't have done it. Accidents happen. At the same time, I'm one of those people who not only is old enough to remember the Kennedy assassination, but I had a moment with John Kennedy when I was a kid, and to this day it's one of the most galvanizing moments of my life. And nobody is ever going to convince me, even with Vincent Bugliosi's book about a year ago, a 1,600-page book, former mayor of Los Angeles County who prosecuted Charles Manson, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a crazy guy acting alone. That's an insult to my intelligence. That was a conspiracy.
I agree with you, and I'm not quite sure why some of these guys feel like it's necessary to push the official story, and this happens all the time. I mean, there's just a lot of questions about this sort of stuff, and I don't know anybody that's, and I've been in the media 45 years, maybe a little longer, and maybe I'm just not big enough, but I've never had somebody from the government come to me and say, don't do this or do this. I've had people kind of steer me in different directions, and if you weren't really, aware of it, you might go along that way, but I'm not even sure it was nefarious, their steering, you know? It's just one of those things hard to prove.
Yes, it gets harder to prove with every passing year, but I think certain people have steered us in the right direction. One of the great pioneers is our friend Jim Mars, who years before he was known for his UFO and, you know, more paranormal-related research, for most of us, our introduction was Crossfire, one of the books on the subject and one of the pioneering books.
It's true, and he's still a great researcher and great reporter.
And a great guy.
And that's true, and he plays a guitar and sings. He's a Texas boy.
The best storytellers.
Yeah.
He's coming from one. One of the masters.
Who else do we have, Peter?
Okay, we have Chuck Zukowski and Debbie Ziegelmeyer. They're a remarkable team of independent and, at the same time, certified MUFON field investigators who co-founded... I think Chuck founded it, and Debbie was right there with him. The MUFON scuba diving team that explores UFOs from an underwater point of view. Chuck, over the years, has also become, certainly a respected Roswell specialist researcher, but, you know, he worked with that wonderful Sci-Fi Channel documentary and book called The Roswell Dig Diaries. Also has participated in a number of other extraordinarily important projects and documentaries. I don't have the working title of their book, lecture, but they were at Roswell last year as well, and very well received indeed.
And how many days are these speakers speaking? Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or Friday and Saturday? Or
yeah, I think the speakers are going to be divided up over Friday and Saturday. Uh-huh. Embarrassed to say right now, I don't have that sheet in front of me. But we've got, again, a full lineup of world-class speakers.
Yeah, anyone else?
Well, just to give you the last three, local respected Roswell researcher, and that is Dennis Balthazar, who, again, is a resident as well as somebody that has focused on this for many years. Dennis also has done a great deal of research and investigation into certain Egyptian mysteries, and we'll be discussing kind of a spectrum of his work in his talk. Another one who many of your listeners may be familiar with is certainly Turkey's best-known female UFO researcher, and that is the always enjoyable Farah Yurtsu, who lives not far from New York City with her American husband.
And she works very closely with us on many, many shows.
Yeah, she is a remarkable antiquarian scholar in that Turkey, like many ancient civilizations, doesn't have this sort of ego and attitude about UFOs are crazy. Not only do most average Turkish people on the street not have a problem with the subject, but they date the influence of these otherworldly craft and beings going back more than 5,000 years. She has written books that have been bestsellers in Turkey, and for me, always sort of puts things in perspective. We're a very young country and a very young culture here, pretty full of ourselves. And you hear Farah speak, and it all assumes a distinct place in a much larger picture.
Right, we're a big fan of Farah, and she's been with us several years now.
Yeah. Rounding out the picture is Joe Jordan. Joe is a founder of a group called CE4, which deals specifically with gathering evidence and coming to findings on the alien abduction phenomena. He will be doing a talk with David Ruffino, and the talk is called Unholy Communion, Alien Abduction, The Verdict. A recent late addition, I think, is Paula Harris, whose specialty is the exopolitical movement. And right now, that is the city speaker lineup. I can tell you briefly that some of the speakers that will be at the museum's lecture series will be the inimitable and unique Stanton Friedman, Don Schmidt, my friend Ron Roediger, Stephen Bassett, Tom Carey, Noe Torres, and the wonderful Ruben Durante.
Yeah, they have a new book on.
You're right, exactly. Their book, and they're a terrific team, is about a very well-documented Mexican crash that has come to be known as Mexico's Roswell. Also, Yvonne Smith, who has pursued work like John Carpenter and regression studies working with abductees. It's going to be one heck of a couple of days in Roswell, New Mexico, and I should also stress there is a lot more to Roswell, New Mexico than just this. Obviously, it is going to be the best-known thing about this city for the rest of its life, but there are other aspects to this community as well as a really great population, lovely people, and for those expecting, you know, to swallow a big pill on, you know, an expensive week or weekend or whatever, their motels and hotels and restaurants and bars are priced like for real human people. It's not New York, it's not Los Angeles or Chicago. It is very down home. It's a great city to get around, and for many of your listeners who UFOs, schmoofos, but they're very interested in 20th century American history, there's a case to be made that the beginning of the end of World War II was in Roswell. As you know, there was only one nuclear bomb wing at the time of the Roswell crash in 47. And in 45, as we came into the summer and the war was coming to an end, the 509th was in Roswell. And the fact is, the same hangar, Hangar 86, I believe, which is still there and is accessible. It's right on the edge of the old airport, of the new airport, the old air base. Hangar 86 was where the crashed artifacts and the alien bodies were brought before being shipped out to Texas and Wright-Patterson. That same hangar, less than 2 years later, is where the Enola Gay and the follow-up B-29 left from that ultimately went on to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which ended World War II. So it's a place with a lot of history, and I'm just touching on it.
Yes, that's true. And we're going to touch on this English thing and their revelations. It even made the CBS network this week, so on a news story. So I want to talk to you about that. You're uniquely qualified for that. We got about 10 minutes left, so we'll be right back. The Elvis Presley Story. collector's item thought to be extinct until recently. Now, all 13 hours of this famous worldwide radio broadcast series, produced in the 70s by rock and roll legend Ron Jacobs from Watermark Productions and heard around the world and hosted by Wink Martindale, is now available on CD. Hear the complete story, from the cradle to the grave, Elvis Presley. He was truly the king of rock and roll. The Elvis Presley Story is a collector's item with all of the music and the people who made Elvis the king of rock and roll. Order now. Limited time discount price, $39.95 plus $5.95 shipping. Don't miss the Elvis Presley Story, available to you exclusively through this radio offer. Order now the Elvis Presley Story. Hurry, supply is limited. Okay, we're talking with Peter. We've been talking about Roswell. What do you make of what's happening over in England?
Well, it's something a lot of us have been quietly waiting for quite some time. Briefly said, Her Majesty's Ministry of Defense, the equivalent of our Department of Defense, last year had intended to begin posting UFO-related declassified documents on their official website and making them available to anybody in the world to read on the site or to download and make copies of. What happened was they kind of came to a screeching halt for a couple of months, causing many out there that were following the story to scream conspiracy or cover-up. The fact is, it was rather mundane. After a lot of analysis, and I've discussed this with my friend and colleague Nick Pope, who is certainly the man to go to on this. Nick, of course, a former minister at the Ministry of Defense with more than 20 years' experience, and for several of those years, the man who was charged with investigating legitimate and, I guess, otherwise UFO sightings. What happened was the British began to study what happened with the French government in the 90s when they had the courage and the vision to do just what the British are doing now, namely declassify and post documents on their official government website. Well, the subject drew so much attention and so many hits that the French military national website crashed. So what the British decided to do was to release the documents in stages over the next 3 or 4 years. And had they pushed it back again, I think it would have been a disastrous public relations move. But yes, as of the past week or so, they are beginning to post the first of the first initial 2,000 or so items. And over the next 3 or 4 years, I understand we're going to see upwards of 10,000 papers on their site about the subject.
What do you draw from what they've released?
Well, number one, like smaller releases several years ago around the Rendlesham Forest case, which is my major territory in this, not unexpectedly, there were no real smoke, but there was an awful lot of interesting smoke. I don't know how else to say it. A lot of intriguing papers that filled in blanks for us in the Rendlesham story, namely that even though the Ministry of Defense had denied for 2 decades, there was no official interest. You know, these things, whatever they were of no defense significance. That they wanted things that the American Air Force had, all came up and let us know in no uncertain terms that the British were very concerned about this and that it was a very real issue. I think we can expect to see some absolutely fascinating moments in history, because the British have officially been collecting this information going back to the old Flying Saucer Working Group, which dates from about 1950. And there will be things superimposed against the early Cold War, against growing tensions with, you know, the Soviet Union as it developed advanced technology. I'm not a prognosticator, and I'm not one of those people that is comfortable making a prediction, but I am convinced that for anybody that is interested in the subject of UFOs or acknowledged, is the British government is doing a major public service for the truth. They are following in the steps of the French, the Belgian government, certain South American governments, continuing to leave the biggest and most powerful first world government in the dust. UFO documents were declassified de facto as the Soviet Union disintegrated, and we now know, going back to the late 40s and early 50s, that they were as concerned originally that these might be American, secret weapons, the same way our papers from the 40s in some cases are concerned with the fact that they may be Soviet. We'll look at anything before the possibility of real extraterrestrial, interdimensional, time-traveling, whatever the heck they are. I don't know. And you know what? It's a moot point. We're not alone. We're being lied to. And right now, the leading proponent of keeping the lid on secrecy is our government. And that's a shame.
Yeah, it is true. And what you say, and it is a shame. And I have a hunch that one of these other countries will actually reveal the ET contact first.
I don't think any one country or any one world leader will ever, and understandably so, want to take such a profound responsibility. It will take nothing short of a confluence of the most powerful leading figures.
So you're saying in Belgium or France or England, if there was ET contact, it's not going to appear in these things?
No, and I think in a way that's the way it should be. This material should be declassified in a thoughtful way. I don't know about you, but when I first got into this, I was a pure zealot. The truth now, power to the people. I'm a product of the 60s. You know, they're lying to us. We can all handle the truth. Well, you know what? Like Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men, I don't know if you can handle the truth. The fact is that these things should be declassified, and I feel right down the line, but in a staged way where you're not just having military and governmental people making these decisions. It should be done with teams of theologians, mental health professionals, historians, anthropologists. What happens every time when we study 19th, 18th, 17th century history when an advanced, quote-unquote, civilization, let's say the British in the 1870s, penetrate into a region of Africa where the local people have never not only seen, you know, people with shiny metal and different color skin and high technology things like guns, but have maybe not even imagined them.
Perhaps the United Nations would be the way to go. Well, since you were there back in 1978 at that UN initiative, Peter, we'll have to do a show on that later. Well, the clock's got us, Peter. I could discuss this for a long time with you, but we're going to have to go. Let's just do this. Urge everyone to plan on going to Roswell for the 61st anniversary, Thursday through Sunday, July 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th. It's been a joy, as usual, Peter. Thanks for all the information. We'll talk to you later. Jane Swartley has been our editor and web producer. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.